All right, BradCooney.com would like to welcome to the show. We are very happy to have from A&E's Ghost Hunters, Mr. Brandon Alves. What is up, Brandon?
Hey, Brad, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
You kidding me? Absolutely an honor to have you on. You guys just kicked off your second season, and we'll get into that because there's some incredible evidence I want to talk about. Before we get into the show and what you guys have been doing for season two, kind of bring my listeners up to speed on how you got involved with the paranormal and how that transitioned to how you got onto the show.
Yeah, you know, my interest in the paranormal began at a very young age. In 1995, I lost my oldest brother to cancer, and in 2004, I lost another brother to suicide, so that kind of sent me on my journey into the unexplained, and I never really had a paranormal experience, per se, that got me involved in the field. It was more, you know, just like having to grow up at a young age and learning about life after death, the possibility of life after death, and, you know, before I ever stepped foot in the field, I went out and read as much literature as I could about ghosts and hauntings, not only from a psychic point of view, but a scientific point of view. Everything I can get my hands on, I read about. And I started to reach out to engineers, medical doctors, and scientists to try and remain as grounded in scientific principles possible before stepping out into the field. And in 2006, I created an organization called American Paranormal Research Association that was very much grounded in that scientific principle and going out to try and document this possible existence of life after death. And that's kind of transitioned now into what you're seeing on the new season of Ghost Hunters.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that part of the show. I investigate, you know, paranormal activity myself, and it's really important to me to get the science involved, man, because you know, you're not, in my opinion, you're not doing much for the field if you're just, you know, everything's a ghost, it's definitely paranormal. You got to leave no stone unturned, and that's what I really appreciate about you guys and your show.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Brad. You know, if we're going to go out here and not only try and find true answers and factual information, but if we want to step out of the shadow of pseudoscience to be taken seriously not only by the public, but the scientific community, we have to open ourselves up to that scrutiny and really look at ourselves in the mirror, if you will, to know exactly how we want to conduct our research and how to find not only factual information but empirical data.
Yeah, for sure. So, of course, I watched every episode of season one, and then season two happens, and it just kicked off. And if the first episode is anything like how the rest of the season is going to be, I mean, basically, the fans need to hold on for a ride, man, because that first episode was pretty amazing. So, if you would, just give me your thoughts on season two so far, and we'll get into that, into the new equipment and that piece of evidence that's blowing everybody away in a second. But just touch on, you know, how you feeling about the season two so far.
Well, you know, what's interesting about season two is now you're starting to see a new version of Ghost Hunters. You know, a lot of people think about Ghost Hunters back when, with the original show, obviously with Taps, you know, Jason and Grant, Steve, yep, and all those guys, and all the work they did for a number of years. And what they saw with that show and the way that show played out was very much because that's the way Taps conducted their investigations, right? That was their methodology. That was the way they went about investigating. So they show up to location, they meet with the client, they do the walkthrough, they come in, they investigate, they do the analysis. But now what you're seeing with this new season of the, you know, the reincarnation of Ghost Hunters is the fact that we are now seeing a new methodology, a new way of investigating that's not the way Taps did it. Nothing wrong with the way Taps did it. If it wasn't for Taps and it wasn't for the original Ghost Hunters, you wouldn't have this awareness that we have now, mm-hmm, within the paranormal field.
Yep.
And these thousands, if not millions, of investigators throughout the world that have modeled themselves after that. But what you're seeing now with the new show is that you're seeing a team that had to gel together in the first season, and now you're seeing a new way of investigating, a new methodology, and a new way of going out there and investigating and trying to find answers, not only for the client, but for the field as well. So it's been pretty exciting.
Yeah, and it's a good point, and this is definitely no knock on Taps, because those guys are like the OGs. I mean, they're the pioneers of paranormal TV anyway. And basically, it's just a matter of the field has evolved since then. It's evolved, and you guys are using, you know, modern, more, you know, technology that they didn't have back then. So this new camera you're using is pretty incredible stuff. So if you would tell the fans what this camera is and how it works.
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing to introduce this camera and how it came about and why we're utilizing that is the fact that for many years I've been talking with engineers, scientists, medical doctors, people, again, like I said earlier, to help me remain grounded in scientific principle. I'm not a scientist in any way, shape, or form, but I want to remain myself and ground myself within that, you know, ideology, within science. So I reached out to these people. And for a number of years, I would ask them, I would say, hey, if ghosts are real and entities are manifesting, you know, since millennia, everything we can think about, people have talked about ghosts and hauntings. People have said they've seen ghosts, they've encountered ghosts. If this is happening, how would it take place, from your opinion? And I was told, and given this theory, that they would possibly be manifesting through photon events. So I was provided a camera that's called an electron multiplying camera. And that camera is designed by, initially, the digital imaging scientific community to record single photon events. So the idea was for us to take this camera out into the field, try and capture what these eyewitnesses have been seeing for a number of years, and to see if that there is a very specific particular matter involved with that, and that would be photons. And I think we've had some really great results so far this new season.
Yeah, there's no question, and we will get into that in just a second. I wanted to get your thoughts on the theory of interdimensional activity. Could, in your opinion, some of the activity that the people that investigate this field experience, do you subscribe to the interdimensional theory at all, that it could be we're just tapping into a dimension other than ours?
I think that's very possible, Brad. I think that interdimensional theory is something to think about, absolutely. And there's even people that are, you know, in the UFO community, or that talk about, you know, UFOs and whatnot, that talk about interdimensional, you know, possibilities, not just extraterrestrial, but interdimensional. So that's definitely something to think about, you know, and especially when you get into quantum physics and things of that nature. I think utilizing this camera, this electron multiplying camera, is going to start giving us more answers in that regard. But I definitely think that the interdimensional portion is a strong possibility and definitely something we have to look into further.
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard a ton of disembodied voices in my experience, but I have heard a handful. I've heard about four or five disembodied voices, and one common denominator in all of those is the tone for me. I'm not sure about for you, but for me, all the disembodied voices that I've heard have a similar tone, not so much in gender, like male or female, but there's like this weird, it's almost like if somebody was encased in like soundproof glass and they're screaming and you can only catch like a muffled version of their voice. That's what I've experienced with the disembodied voices, and I'm kind of thinking, you know, maybe that could be like the interdimensional type thing, where it's not quite a crossing over completely, but an attempt. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, definitely. I know that disembodied quality to it is definitely something to think about. And is that because it could be possibly interdimensional, or is it, you know, possibly because that there's some kind of energy or manifestation involved with that sometimes it's stronger than the other? It's definitely fascinating, especially when you start to think about not only hearing the disembodied voices, but, you know, capturing that on, you know, audio equipment.
Yeah.
And you think about using certain types of audio equipment and trying to use the best audio equipment that's available, the highest bit rates, high quality wave recordings, and then going a step further by taking that into spectrum analysis to try and find out if this is some kind of stray radio frequency, some kind of stray cell phone frequency, or whatever that may be, because sometimes, you know, when you hear these voices and record them, it definitely has a human tone to it, and almost mimics human speech. And going that step further to try and break it down through spectrum analysis, you can really see if it's, you know, something we can't explain or can't.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's talk about the last episode. My head's still spinning about that shadow figure that you captured with that camera. I've seen shadow figures, but not even remotely close to the defined shadow figure that you captured with this camera. Talk a little bit about how that happened, and just a little bit more about the camera you used to capture it.
yeah, again, you know, the electron multiplying camera, again, is a camera that was built mainly and used in the purpose of the digital imaging scientific community to try and record single photon events. And just so you know, to go over that again, photon events are light events, and these light events typically are not seen by the human eye. There are certain people out there that do have extra proteins in their eyes that can see photon events in real time, which is something we can get into later, but the whole purpose of this camera is to record these photons and to observe them and try and understand them. And that goes back to the theory that these entities, or ghosts, if you will, may be manifesting through those means. Another interesting side point is that these photons do carry electromagnetic radiation. That's something else to think about. But when we took this camera and we put that in the tuberculosis hospital at Fort Stanton, we captured something we can't explain. And if people have seen the episode, there was an initial image that we collected where we saw this very bright light in the lobby of the hospital. We saw that not only in real time on the EMCCD camera, but I would look up with my own eyes and look out those windows, there was nothing there. So we wanted to instantly go out there, send Brian and the cameraman to try and disprove that. So possibly it's infrared light. If it was a flashlight, we would have seen it with our own eyes, but we wanted to send Brian out there to try and recreate it with not only infrared light, but with a flashlight. And when Brian and the cameraman went out there, I was the only one in the hospital by myself behind the EMCCD camera watching on the monitor to try and see if we can recreate that. And that's when this very amazing shadow figure shows up out of nowhere. And now, what's even more interesting about that is the fact we could not recreate the initial image with a flashlight, with infrared light. But when this shadow figure showed up, I did not see that on the monitor. I did not see that with my own eyes, but I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, I felt like there was definitely someone in there with me. I mean, it's just one of those sensations, no matter who you are, you know that feeling. You know that feeling of someone else being there with you, and, you know, you feel like you're being watched almost. But going a step further, having that footage analyzed by one of our scientific consultants, a man I've been working with for many years, he has a PhD in physics, he took a look at that footage, and he knows very well how the EMCCD camera works, how the electron multiplying camera works. And he told me that the complete absence of light within that image is unbelievable and something that he can't explain in any way, shape, or form, because this camera is not meant to record absence of light. So when you see that figure not only, you know, show itself outside of a locked doorway, but the way it comes into frame, the way it leaves frame, that absence of light in the form of what looks like a humanoid-shaped figure is unbelievable and something that still has me scratching my head to this day.
Yeah, I mean, every hair in my body stood up when I saw that. It was on a different level than any shadow figure that I've ever seen. And even the movement, of it was so much different than other shadow figures, because most of the shadow figures that I've seen are quick moving, you know, darting across the room, and your peripheral vision catches it, but you try to get a fix on it, and most times it's gone already. But this was like methodical. It wasn't like fast at all. I mean, your eyes are fixed on it, and it had almost like an appearance to me like it was like peeking out the door and kind of like looking and then going back in, you know.
Absolutely, and you know, that whole thing set up a series of events that were really interesting. You know, from the initial image that Brian and I noticed with this light and that actually looked like a shadow figure walking from right to left through those windows at the end of the hall, and then Brian and the cameraman go outside to recreate that, I almost feel like those events are very much connected. And what we capture with that figure coming out of the door frame like that, I think that that was when initially that first image we saw was somehow that entity or whatever you want to call it came into our plane, showed up. It believes that we left the building. It peeks out of that doorway and noticed that I was standing there still, and that's why it reacted the way it did. I think that we were just in the right place at the right time and got very lucky to capture that image with a very sensitive scientific piece of equipment.
And, you know, when you look at that, for me, as I analyze that, I throw away residual and bring in intelligent. It did not look like any kind of a residual type spirit or whatever you want to call it. That had to what appeared to me to be an intelligent spirit.
I agree 100%. Absolutely. I agree. And not only that, we actually collected that very, you know, Class A EVP not long after that as well. That sounds like a person saying, and to me, I mean, again, I heard what sounds like we have short memories, which is an interesting statement. I don't know what that means or how that's connected, but very clear, very present. There were only three of us in that building, myself, Brian Murray, and our cameraman. And that was it. And, you know, we're very controlled in our investigations. You know Kendall very well. You know how Kendall conducts himself.
Oh, yeah.
We're very much methodical in the way we do things. We're very much about controlling our environment, going in there and trying to, you know, collect the best data possible. So that's a moment, you know, in my 16 years of research, I'll definitely never forget.
So let me back up a second. So when we, earlier in this, in our discussion this evening, you had mentioned that the passing of your two siblings is what kind of launched you into onto this journey. Where were you as far as believing life after death, you know, when that happened to your siblings, as opposed to where you are now? Like, where are you now with your belief in life after death?
Well, you know, Brad, that's one of the biggest things with investigating the paranormal for me, is that I struggle with my belief constantly, constantly. You know, I always call myself a natural skeptic.
Yep.
And you know, the term skeptic gets thrown around in a negative way a lot of the times. And you know, working with Dr. Harry Kaur, which is one of my scientific consultants I've been working with for about 10 years now, he is the only person in history to receive two PhDs simultaneously in any discipline. And he received those in physics and chemistry. And the reason I started working with him is because not only is he open to the possibility of there being, you know, things we can't explain in this universe, but he also lost a brother to cancer, and he lost a brother to suicide, and that's where him and I really connected. And he was the one that taught me that the term skeptic is kind of misinterpreted, you know. So when people think of skeptic, which a lot of people out there that refer to themselves as skeptics are technically biased, because if you're a skeptic and you go into a situation already not believing in it, you're technically biased.
That's a good point.
A skeptic is someone that wants to find evidence that it exists, not being biased in the fact that they're going in with a preconceived notion that something isn't real. You want to go in and find data and empirical evidence to find that it is real, or trying to find evidence that this phenomenon is happening. So you're not trying to, you know, influence yourself in any way, shape, or form. But you know, from, you know, the experiences of the death of my brothers to now, it's tough because we go to Fort Stanton, we capture something like we saw on this new episode with this very sensitive piece of equipment. That starts to make me think, hey, there may be something to a life after death. But it's tough because it's so hard for me, because there's so many times we go to a location and absolutely nothing happens, as you well know. Investigating the paranormal, it's so many times nothing happens. There's nothing going on. But I've always been a firm believer of Einstein's theory that energy is neither created nor destroyed. The question is, we are obviously made of energy. Our brains are firing off neurons. We have energy running through our body at all times. Once we die, where does that energy go, and does it retain consciousness?
Yes.
That's my big question, and that's what I'm trying to figure out.
That's a question I posed to Michael Denon, who's a physicist that was a repeat guest on my podcast show. He's in our film, too. Brilliant guy, and he has a book out that you probably would like to read too. I'll send you a link so you can. It's called Divine Science, and it's like how science and paranormal activity can coexist, something like that. Basically, the premise of the book is how science and the paranormal can coexist. It's a really cool book, and he touches on exactly what you were just talking about. So after seeing this shadow figure, I don't know if you just heard that, but that was some thunder that almost rattled my windows.
I do hear that.
That's crazy. So when you look at that shadow figure you guys captured, you had just mentioned that you struggle with believing in paranormal activity and science, but when you look at that piece of evidence, do you feel that whatever it was had some sort of intelligence to it, whether or not it's a spirit or not? What do you think it was?
You know, I definitely feel it did have intelligence just by the way it moves and it reacts to the situation. You know, I definitely think that. But as far as what it was, I have no idea. All I can do is take that information, take that data that was recorded on that camera, provide it to experts in the field, people that are very familiar with photon events, people that are very familiar with physics, and let them be the judge. And when they come back to me after they review that footage and say, hey, I have no explanation for it, that's when we have to say, hey, it's above normal, therefore it's paranormal. You know, we can speculate all day as to what it is. We can really, you know, go down the rabbit hole and have all these theories and speculations. But all we can say is it's unexplainable. Can we jump to a conclusion and say it's a ghost? I'm not willing to do that yet.
Yeah.
But I am going to say that it is unexplainable. I think it's a huge breakthrough and a huge step forward for this field.
So this is a little bit of a tricky question because I'm not sure if y'all are doing that with future episodes that haven't aired yet. Let me just put it to you this way. Do you think it would be a good idea for somebody to take one of those cameras and just like the EMCCD camera and just set that thing up at a location and just let it roll? I mean, like overnights, let it roll and then analyze like days worth.
Sure, no, that's absolutely should be something that people are doing going forward in this field. You know, we're the first ones to actually take that type of technology and implement it into, you know, our, you know, research in the paranormal field. I would hope that if there are going to be people going forward that take this information and run with it by going out there and not only utilizing that for paranormal research when it comes to ghosts and hauntings, but also UFO research, cryptid research, whatever it is, things we can't explain in this world. Take that technology, implement it, and let it roll. Like you said, if we in some way could get the funding to virtually use these cameras like you would CCTV, that would be unbelievable. That would be a huge step forward. And that's when we start to collect some real data and we really are making breakthroughs, because again, we are using this camera based off of a theory that these entities are possibly manifesting through photon events. Now we're breaking this down to very particular matter and really looking at this from a perspective that no one really has within the paranormal field. So I would love to see something like that done. I think that would be a very great study.
Yeah, especially at our location. I would love to set one of those cameras up in every room. Like, we have cameras in every room except for the bathrooms, of course. I would just, oh my God, have one of these EMCCD cameras in every room and just let it roll. I mean, I analyze video every day of our location. I'll take screenshots of every camera angle before I go to bed, and then the next morning when I wake up, I'll pull up the live shots, and then I'll compare the screenshots to the live shots and see if anything's moved. And that's how I analyze our location. But man, if I had one of these cameras, oh my God, that would be insane.
Yeah, that would be ideal. That's why, like, since we've been talking about this new season of Ghost Hunters and we've been talking about this new technology, when we said we were making breakthroughs, I mean, we weren't kidding by saying that. We weren't trying to hype a show. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Again, that's part of it. Everyone, being that we do have, you know, a nationally, you know, syndicated TV show and we're out there doing this, when we say we're making breakthroughs, we weren't kidding. We were going to fulfill that promise.
Mm-hmm.
And going forward, being able to say, hey, look, there's a very particular matter, again, these photon events, I think we're onto something, and I think that it needs to be looked at further. And I think that, you know, with your case study in this location, you guys have been investigating for a while. If you can implement that in some way, that would be very ideal.
Yeah, totally going to be in the works. And look, man, you guys, it's not a hype thing with your show because you guys already backed up what you said in the first episode. I mean, you guys said there were some big things you guys are going to start showing, which is all the more reason that the fans need another season, too, just because... a third season with this EMCCD camera could provide some serious results, big time.
Yeah, absolutely. Not only that, there's a lot of things I have in the works as well. Again, everything that I've been implementing into this new season of Ghost Hunters is theory and ideas I've had for many years going back with my organization, American Paranormal Research Association. This is stuff I've been working on for well over a decade, and being able to have the platform of Ghost Hunters and being able to go out there in this capacity has really provided a lot of, you know, resources to go out there and really test these theories, go even further with it. So another season would really break that wide open with not only the EMCCD technology, the idea and the theory of these entities manifesting through photon events, but I have ideas that can go even further to correlate that data and to really, you know, take that next step with science.
Yeah, man. Well, I know the fans want another season. I mean, I could see the Twitter lights up when you guys are on, especially when you do live tweets, and you can just see what the fans are saying. So let's hope that happens. All right, so I got a fan question. I always like to incorporate fans on my podcast and get some of the folks to chime in. And when they heard you were coming on the show, I had a few questions from fans. Okay, so this guy's name is Keith, and he wants to know, and I'm going to quote, "Do you think with the addition of the EMCCD camera to the paranormal field that we can one day legitimize light anomalies and orbs to be recognized as possibly connected to the paranormal field?"
That's a great question. Great question. And with this first episode, we were talking about in Clifton, Arizona, those anomalies we collected that I like to call luminous phenomena. You know, when the digital imaging sensors and using those sensors with digital cameras or whatnot came into the fold in paranormal, that's when you started to see an uprise in orbs, or what people believe to be orbs. That is not only based off the fact that these sensors are reading that information in a certain way, but you have moisture, dust, things like that that are coming across as what people would believe to be orbs. But with this EMCCD technology, we are now seeing a whole new phenomena, right? You're seeing these anomalies that are permitting its own light, right? So that's what's even more interesting. So I think that it could take a step forward with what people believe to be orbs and how that's perceived to be, or I would call it luminous phenomena. So I think that's going to be a big step forward. But again, with the digital imaging stuff that we've seen over the years, a lot of that is going to be dust and moisture and bugs, things of that nature.
Sure.
But this camera we're using now is eliminating a lot of that. So I think that it definitely could take a step forward.
Have you seen anything else? And again, if it's something you can't disclose now because there's a whole bunch of episodes to go, just say can't talk about it. Have you seen anything else using the EMCCD that's intrigued you, other than that shadow figure that y'all picked up?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're going to see other pieces of data collected with that camera that's going to make you think even further about this field.
Yeah, that's
and how entities manifest. And that's the beauty of this camera, is that we've seen and collected different types of manifestations or things we can't explain. I mean, you can call it a manifestation if you want. You can call it unexplainable, whatever you want to do. But again, every time we capture something on this camera, I have it looked at by one of our consultants, and they have no explanation for it, and that's why it moves forward, and we present that not only to the client, but within the show. And you're going to see a couple more instances where it's strange, man. I can't make sense of it yet, but the beauty of it is it all falls into line with this particular matter, talking about photon events, and that being something that I think we have to look into further, so I think people will be excited about that.
That's crazy, man. I can't wait to see more of this stuff. All right, one more fan question from Jan. She's from Orlando, Florida. She wanted me to ask you, have you been in a situation investigating that's just rattled you, scared you, just got you all shook up? Anything that really dramatic happened to you?
Not yet. Not yet. I've been in a few situations where I've been surprised by things and left me scratching my head, but nothing that scared me the point where I wouldn't go back or wouldn't want to be involved in a situation like that. So, not yet. We'll see, though.
Yeah, cool. All right, so the last episode, some crazy things happened where when you guys were leaving, like something hit the side of the car, you had some pushback from some of the folks, you know, and to be fair, you had a lot of really welcome folks, too, that were glad you were there. Are you guys running into that the more remote places you're going?
You know, that's only happened on the episode that everyone saw, the premiere episode from
yeah.
Arizona. That's the only time that's happened.
Good.
Majority of the time, people are very welcoming and warm and want us to be there. But, you know, there are certain times that people move to places that are off the grid. And, you know, they want to live there for a very specific purpose. And I know that with the Clifton, Arizona episode, there were things that didn't make it into the episode. I know on the show, you saw that there was a producer that walked up to us and said that there was a man walking around, and the police warned us about that. But there was actually a person that actually got arrested on camera.
Oh, wow.
That didn't make it into the show and said a lot of things. There was actually a moment where Grant, myself, and Brian were walking down the street, and a guy just came out of nowhere. It's like probably 2:30 in the morning, just came out of the riverbed and said, you're dealing with the wrong people, brother. I'll show you where the killing happened.
Whoa, my God.
So there
were
some interesting things that happened. But again, that does not represent the entire town of Clifton in any way, shape, or form. But what you saw in those episodes only represent a very small piece of what really happens as a whole in the whole thing. But yeah, no, all these other locations we've been to have been great. You know, people have been warm and welcoming and really want answers. So that's a big part of it. But it's tough sometimes. You know, there's certain people that don't want to be, you know, recognized on a national scale like that. You know, sometimes you can't blame those people.
Yeah. I would have got a thermal cam on that dude that came out and threatened you like that just to make sure it wasn't something else.
Right, exactly.
I would have broke out my FLIR, man. Let me make sure that's not a spirit. All right, one more fan question. And this is Mike in Dallas, Texas. Please ask Brandon what is his favorite. I think we know the answer. What is his favorite investigation tool to use when investigating?
Even CCD camera, yeah. All day, man.
Yeah.
You know, Sean, multiplying cameras where we go. But beyond that is the data logger, you know, and using something that can record all the environmental conditions associated with the locations that we're investigating, right? That's a huge step forward as well with this field. If we can start to correlate environmental conditions and changes when we're collecting, you know, anomalous phenomena, I think that's where we really start to step forward and recording all that environmental data as well as things we can't explain. And that's, you know, cataloging that, looking into that further, and really, you know, cross-referencing that between our investigations. I think we can go really far with that.
One of my favorite pieces of evidence is EVPs, especially if you can get, like, direct response type EVPs that are, like, within context of what you're asking. What are some EVPs that's really blown you away, like some direct response EVPs?
Well, actually, it's funny enough, we're going to be doing something in the season of Ghost Hunters where I resurrect an old piece of ghost hunting history, if you will, or paranormal research history, where it goes back to the very beginning of ITC. And I talk about ITC a lot when I, you know, do Facebook Lives and get online and talk about certain things. But you're going to hear a very clear Class A EVP that's collected at a location. I can't say where yet,
yep.
Unfortunately, but
yeah.
You're going to hear something that directly correlates with the history of this location. And utilizing a piece of paranormal history to do that, you know, I rebuilt that with the modern technology we have now, but you're going to hear something unbelievable that I just cannot wait for everyone to see and hear, because it's just, that blew my mind, because I've always been an audio guy for many years. That was a big thing for me, was EVP, and I was always into ITC. I've read about ITC my whole life. Instrumental transcommunication, that was something that was a big part of the field going back for 50 years, you know, at times. So I am a ghost geek in that regard, and there was always one big experiment that was conducted for a number of years that was actually recognized by Washington, D.C. at one point that I bring back and utilize. I got the original schematics. I rebuilt it with modern technology, and we capture something I cannot wait for people to hear.
Yeah, man. I'm definitely looking forward to that. What's some advice, Brandon, what's some advice you can give to some of the other teams out there that are, you know, trying to get answers, and like maybe some equipment advice, some setup advice? Just talk to them a little bit.
Sure. You know, the first thing I would say is never use anything that says "for entertainment purposes only" on it.
Yeah.
That's my number one thing. You know, I mean, and again, there's no experts in this field. I just want to preface that.
Yeah.
There are no experts in this field in any way, shape, or form. No one has the exact answers. No one is exactly right. But I'll tell you right now, if we want to be taken seriously by the scientific community as well as the public, we have to stop using these gimmicky garage tech devices that are making us look bad. Because those devices cannot be tested. They cannot be looked at by other industries. They cannot be scrutinized. They cannot be tested. That's the biggest thing. If we want to move forward, we have to use pieces of equipment that are developed and you can go to a manufacturer and say, hey, look, I captured something I believe to be anomalous or something I believe to be unexplainable. They can not only give you those answers, but you can reach out to a professional, a scientist, an engineer, whatever it may be, that can give you realistic, real-world explanations for these things. So that's the biggest thing. And I know that a lot of times when I talk about the spirit boxes, the SLS cameras, things of that nature, people get really offended. I'm not trying to attack people. I'm not trying to attack people's belief systems. I'm just saying if we want to move forward and be taken seriously, we have to open ourselves up to that scientific scrutiny. And again, if you have a belief system and if you already believe, more power to you. Go out and do that. But if you want to find factual data and empirical evidence, we have to stay away from those devices. And again, some of those devices are very much expensive, very expensive. So if you're getting involved in the field, you can use a compass to try and find unnatural EMF fields, things of that nature. There's other ways you can go about it without having to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars to go out there and, you know, fulfill your own prophecy or fulfill your own, you know, belief system.
Yeah, very well said. I am definitely not a big fan of spirit boxes. Basically, they're just a radio receiver, and it's just scanning, and you're just picking up little bits and pieces of DJs and, like, people on the radio talking, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly, Brad. 100%. Yeah. Again, a lot of people ask me about why won't you use a spirit box. Keep in mind, I have used spirit boxes in the past. Mm-hmm. I even used Frank's boxes, if we can go back even further beyond that. I which those were developed not for the not for the ghost side of research. Those were developed to try and communicate with UFOs and extraterrestrial life. That's why those were created in the first place. But anyways, if we are to be taken seriously and if we want to go further, if you were to take any recording you had from a spirit box and you took that to an audio engineer and you wanted to try and find out if this was something truly unexplainable, if you put that into a spectrum analysis, it's going to show up only as radio frequencies, and therefore that's contaminated. Therefore, that information cannot be taken seriously. So you are using something that is contaminated and not going to give you results in any way, shape, or form. Yes, maybe you can collect something on there that is strange or something you can't explain, but if we want to push this field forward and to be taken seriously, that device is flawed and contaminated, and we really can't take it seriously.
Yeah, I agree. Now, with REM pods, I've used REM pods in the past, and for me, the only way I take REM pods a little more seriously is if I can get direct response. Like, I'm talking about asking something to make it go off three times, and it goes off three times, and then say, all right, move towards it, and make it go off four times, and then it goes off four times. I have to see a pattern, like a really good pattern or something like that, before I can halfway buy into REM pods.
Sure. No, I mean, that's a good way to, you know, try to have a control over that device. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the thing is, same with K2 meters.
Oh, they're terrible.
The REM pod is very easily manipulated by cell phone frequencies as well as radio frequencies. So it's very tough to utilize those devices within a paranormal investigation because we are surrounded by frequencies. I mean, like the entire band is completely full. If you were to look into that and talk to engineers and people that are involved in that industry, if you were to look at their schematics, they can show you in a visual way about how every frequency in this you know environment we live in now is completely taken up by some kind of bandwidth. It's the craziest thing you would ever see. But that's why the REM pod, millimeters, again, K2 meters, things like that, they're very easily manipulated by these frequencies that are man-made. So it's so hard to utilize that within an investigation. Like you just said, if you ask for it to go off four times in a row, that's a different story. It's a great way to try and control that and create a control around that device. But again, it's so difficult to rely on it because they're so easily manipulated.
Yeah, the K2 meter just makes my stomach knot up. They're just terrible. I mean, you can get a notification on your Facebook, you know, through your phone, and then them things blow up. Those K2 meters just start blowing up. Definitely not something I'm a fan of either. All right, so what do you think one of the biggest misconceptions about paranormal investigating is?
You know, I would have to say that everyone thinks that we investigate at night all the time,
Yeah.
The shows have made that popular, obviously, but, you know, the biggest thing is not only we go into investigate at night because you want to cut down on contamination as much as possible, right? There's less traffic.
Mm-hmm.
There's less people out and about. If you're investigating in a business, a homeowner case, whatever it may be, you're going to be able to get more access and less contamination at night. But that, you know, as you're a paranormal investigator, Brad, you know, you do a lot more work during the day, you know, not only from the historical research point of view, mm-hmm. the evidence analysis, talking to eyewitnesses, whatever it may be, we do a lot of that work during the day. I think the work at night is a smaller portion compared to what we're doing during the day. So I think that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions, especially when it comes down to seeing the shows. It's all in infrared. It's all night vision. It makes it. Some people think it's just done because it's spooky, which may be, you know, the case for some shows. But again, I think that the practical investigators out there, the people that are really doing this, you do it because you want to cut down on contamination.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the most dramatic activity we've had is during the day. I mean, I've had some nutty stuff happen 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. I mean, broad daylight.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What's your opinion on cold spots and temperature drops?
You know, it's a tough one. You know, if we start to think about the idea and the theory that they say that entities or ghosts are using that energy around them to manifest, right? That's where the idea that cold spots are happening. That's why those cold spots are taking place, because that heat and energy around it's being utilized to manifest. I think that's a possible theory. It's very possible. But when you start talking about temperature drops, I think it's not going to give you the proper data to say, hey, look, this is unexplainable. I think that's tough. I think when we start to get into barometric pressure and pressure changes, that's going another step further. We've actually started to notice with our research that when we have a lot of times residual type of activity taking place, there is drastic changes in pressure.
Interesting.
So that's starting to get really interesting, right? As well as the fact that when we use this EMCVD camera, I'll give a little bit of a spoiler here, so whatever. But we've had instances where we've seen anomalies on this camera where we not only do we see EMF changes, we've seen pressure changes. So that's going a step further. That's why it's so important to utilize these devices to record the data and record environmental conditions and those changes within the environment from pressure, humidity, temperature, EMF. So the more we start to look into that, the more we start to analyze that, I think the more answers we'll have.
So for you, what is like some of the top compelling evidence that makes you lean more towards believing?
You know, I'd have to say this newfound data we've had with seeing these photon events.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's really pushing that further for me, because you can talk about, you know, seeing a ghost all day. You can talk about seeing something unexplainable. But when you start to break it down on that, you know, particular matter level, and you start to actually throw theory out that these entities are manifesting through certain, you know, forms that are recognized by the scientific community, I think that's when you start to say, hey, look, I think there's something to this, and I think that there's people out there that not only can see this with their naked eye, but are experiencing these things that have been reported for millennia.
All right, man. Wow. We covered a lot in a little bit of time. I don't have a whole lot more for you, but I definitely want to give you an opportunity to tell all the fans out there and the listeners where they can follow you, Brandon, on your social media. Of course, they can check out the show on A&E channel, but go ahead and tell them what time, and just go ahead and take the mic and close it up.
Absolutely. Thanks, Brad. First off, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much. You can find me at BrandonJAlvis.com. You can also find me at all social media handles at Brandon Alvis. And you'll see the shows Wednesdays at 9 p.m. on A&E. That's what we're doing. We're excited. There's going to be a lot more breakthroughs in this season, a lot more information that we're going to be providing, and we're very excited. So thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, man. Let's get you back on soon.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.